Hey, good afternoon, Juno. Not that many of you aren't out in the sun listening to this. It's 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska, on a warm, sunny day. Typical Juneau summer weather. Anyway, here we are with Juneau Afternoon. We've got great guests today. Katie Bowser is going to tell us all about the Community Day coming up tomorrow on campus. George Hieronymus is in Juneau and is going to be the Interim Director of Catholic Community Services. We'll meet him. Anton Schwartz, Juneau Jazz and Classics, will come in and preview his Friday night performance tonight. And Bill Merck will be here to highlight the Poetry Slam on 360 North. So all of that's going to be happening here on Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned with us, okay? It's time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two walks are taking place this weekend in Rapid City, South Dakota, to heighten awareness of domestic violence and sexual assault. Jim Kent spoke with one participant who's remembering a relative and reminding people that not all victims survive abuse.
When Nicole Bosner steps out on Rapid City streets this Saturday, she'll be thinking of her sister-in-law and the woman's two young children. Yesenia Suarez disappeared in Florida last fall along with 9-year-old Thalia and 8-year-old Elijah after an argument with her husband. But the following day, all three were considered dead by local law enforcement. Yesenia's husband was later charged in her murder. The bodies of Yesenia and her children, says Nicole Bosner, still haven't been found.
It breaks my heart. It's something that I can't shake. It's something that I can't get over. It kind of stays in the back of my mind, and I'll think about it all day, and, I mean, I've had nightmares about it. It's life-changing.
Notwithstanding, Kogie Clark wants women to know that there is hope after the abuse. Clark is a Muscogee tribal member living in Oklahoma. She's also a survivor of sexual assault both as a child and an adult. Clark says the best way to heal is to share the pain with other survivors and to let the public know that sexual abuse and domestic violence are sad realities of the world we live in, wherever we call home. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Native organizations are applauding the confirmation of Diane Humitiwa from the Hopi tribe to serve as a federal judge for Arizona. This week's Senate approval makes her the first Native woman and third Native American to hold such a position. Richard Guest with the Native American Rights Fund says Humitiwa will bring a fresh perspective to cases from Indian country.
It also lays the groundwork for Judge Humitiwa, as with her predecessors, to be mentors to Native American students who may be seeking a career in the law, that it is actually an attainable goal to not only become a lawyer, but to pursue the even higher calling of becoming a judge, that is a possibility now.
Native organizations say there are many more qualified Native attorneys to fill vacancies and move up in the judicial system. 2014 marks 20 years of the Native American and Indigenous program at the Sundance Film Institute. Tristan Autone has more.
Founded in 1984, the Sundance Institute's Native American and Indigenous program has supported Indigenous filmmakers like Chris Ayer, Billy Luther, and the late Phil Lucas.
Sundance Institute has supported three generations of Native filmmakers through our workshops and through our labs and through mentoring.
That's Bird Runningwater, director of the program. He says looking to the next 20 years, there's no telling where things will go.
We have a question mark in terms of who is the fourth generation, if you look at that support in terms of a medicine wheel and those three generations, and we have a question mark in that fourth generation.
I think the program really nurtures filmmakers like myself.
Missy Whiteman is one of the four filmmakers selected out of over 100 applications this year. She says she's been dreaming of coming to Sundance since at least 2001. Her screenplay for the Coyote Way trilogy was chosen this year.
But the one that I submitted is a silent film, and it has Indian Sign Language and some Indigenous language in it as well. So that's the one that they selected.
The Sundance Institute is also planning a series of events through the year to celebrate their 20th anniversary in both New York and Santa Fe. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
In May 2002, Gordon's Island in Maine was returned to the Passamaquoddy tribe. The island was a burial site for many of the tribe's ancestors who died of smallpox in the 1800s. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native
Magical
Voice
Weavens
One,
puppet show,
the Native American Radio
Tuesday,
Service.
Tuesday, May 27th for two shows at the Mendenhall Valley Library. Don't miss this delightful interpretation of Beauty and the Beast, a touching and humorous marionette play full of chuckles and drama. Experience the masterful artistry of Dan and Zan Rayner as they bring their handcrafted marionettes to life while setting the stage for one of the most beloved fairy tales of all time. Brought to you by the Friends of the Juno Public Libraries. For more information, visit juno.org/library or find us on Facebook.
6 minutes, 7 seconds after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News on an incredibly beautiful sunny day. The lady I'm about to talk to bicycled over here from the university. Hey, Katie Bosler. Katie Bosler is here. I'll turn her microphone on so she can actually talk to you.
Yeah.
And she's going to tell us about some great things that are going on the campus. But I got to say, wasn't last week Bike Week? Are you just thoroughly dedicated here?
No, today is Bike to Work Day.
It's Bike to Work Day.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
It's Bike to Work Week this week. Just a little. For accuracy's sake, I did ride my bicycle to UAS from Douglas this morning, but then I took the bus back to town.
Which is so cool. You stick your bike on the front of the bus and get aboard and ride into town.
It's fantastic. And a day like this, you think, this is a pretty cool place to live.
Yeah.
I did miss the bacon, though.
Oh,
seriously.
They were doing this bacon thing. Yeah, I remember
They're giving out bacon at Cycle Alaska, and I just had to get to work.
Just had to get to work.
So it didn't make the bacon.
Okay, well, anyway. So Katie's here, and tomorrow is Community Day at the UAS campus.
Yes.
And you got some doings. Okay.
Yes, Community Day on Campus, Carnival of Arts.
We have a new
title here because we're going to have about 200 works of art from elementary school students out of the university. Thanks to Nancy Lanehart and Nancy DeCherney. Nancy Lanehart with the school district, of course, and Nancy DeCherney, the head of the Arts Council.
Mm-hmm.
And so this work will be displayed tomorrow, and then we'll be outdoors. It'll be really nice because it's going to be a beautiful day like today. It's going to be the ultimate community day on campus, Carnival of Arts, and then those works will go to the Nugget Mall after tomorrow. So that's kind of a new thing this year.
Forecast says you're going to be in the 70s again tomorrow.
Yeah,
after a little cloudiness in the morning and then sun all afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a dynamite day for it.
Yeah, and I'm sure you probably heard about some of the things that are happening from Nancy yesterday at the Bouncy House by the Eagle Pole. We have a new pedestrian kind of walkway at UAS right along the buildings there, so probably have some booths lined up along there. I know the library will be represented. We'll have the petting zoo for the instruments, as well as DIPAC is going to have their touch tank.
Yeah, touch tank.
You can buy pansies for the fundraiser. Landscape Alaska will be out there. It's always kind of a fun, somewhat of a free-for-all, too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't know who's going to show up. But UAS is going to be quite well represented. We have a new residence hall going up on campus, and we're very excited about that. So you can at least see it from the outside. You know, it's still got the pink Tyvek, so it still has that Alaskan look.
Yeah.
but it should be ready for fall classes.
That is going to be so cool. The view out of the front of the residence hall is the lake with the glacier up behind it. I mean,
it's going to be fantastic.
People are going to be standing, staring out the windows. They'll never go to class.
Yeah. So if you want to know more about that new facility, we will have some information there. Mm-hmm. Also, housing will be able to take you in a van over to our regular housing, which is a little bit off campus. If you want to see what that's all about, that's where we also have apartments for families and for individuals who want to live with roommates. So you can learn all about housing. Also, advising and admissions will be there. They'll have a really fun kind of ring toss game with goldfish that aren't real goldfish, but at least you get a fish.
Could somebody actually register for fall classes at the?
Not at Community Day. You can find out how.
Okay.
You can find
out
how. And if you want to find out even more about how to do that, we do have a Best of UAS series going this summer. And if you go to the website, you can find out more about that, where you can come out, and learn about registration, but at least you can find out how to be a UAS student. Also, our career education, School of Career Education, will have a booth at Community Day, and you can learn all about their great programs for vocational technical education.
Okay, Katie, we better tell folks, you've redone the campus traffic flow, and there's really only one entrance now to where all this is going to happen.
Right. Well,
then DOT kindly has been constructing a traffic circle down there by DeHart. So
yes.
Coming in from town or coming in from the valley is going to be kind of difficult. I think the word is out that you probably, if you've got the time, come around the back loop road because it's
yes.
a lot easier. You don't have to go through the detours or anything.
Just to fill in the details, the former back entrance to UAS is now and has been for more than a year the main entrance. So the way you might usually come is to drive by the Hot Bite and DeHart's and take a right up the back loop and then take a right at UAS. But what's happening is there's a huge Department of Transportation renovation going on out that way right now, and they will be working tomorrow. So we are recommending that people drive from the back loop road, which would be sort of, I guess you'd say, the back way. And there's plenty of parking. There should be a mosquito market also in the parking lot, which is kind of fun.
Which is Alaskan's version of a flea market.
Yes,
of course,
where people just sort of sell stuff out of their tailgate. So there's going to be a lot happening.
So
tomorrow.
When we say Community Day here, what we're really talking about is the whole community coming out to the campus and kind of having a great time and meeting your neighbors and finding out a bunch about the UAS campus.
Well, the thing is, Pat, a lot of people, unless you work there or are a student there, have some reason to be there. You just don't make it.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful, beautiful place to be, especially right now, right on Auk Lake.
Yeah.
I mean, we're almost getting warm enough probably to take a dip in the lake if you're brave.
One more 70-degree day, it might be. The top of that water warms up pretty fast, but then you get your toes down in there, you're going to want maybe some booties on or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. So these are all of the wonderful things that are going to happen tomorrow, but what's in the near future for the UAS campus?
Well, just before I get away from Carnival of Arts Community Day, I should remind people that really a main purpose of this is to hear music, right? And so there will be a wonderful lineup of local, mainly youth groups, playing music all day from 11 to 4 at the university library in the bottom floor there. It's a lovely setting. And I know that Alaska, UAS's own Alaska Pella a cappella group will be singing, I think, somewhere around 1:40. And you'll also hear, like, you know, the jam Alaska Music Matters kids that's the first, second, and third graders who are learning to play violin in school. They're just always a hoot. Lots of fun to see and listen to. And there is a nice article today in the Empire. On page A4, that
schedules.
Eight that actually continues on A4, go figure. But that has kind of some of the basics here about Community Day on campus.
Okay.
There's also posters around town. And I just want to thank Nancy DeCherney and the Arts Council, Linda Rosenthal, and Jazz and Classics for every year, you know, really making this happen at the university. And we all benefit, and it's just a wonderful way for the community to see what's happening out at UAS and learn more about our institution of higher education right here in the capital city.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So we should mention, too, this is all free.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the only thing I think there's a charge for is you're going to have some food court
there'll be food trucks and food booths and, you know, kettle corn and barbecue, stuff like that.
And of course, the mosquito market, those are not purchased.
If you're buying, but other than that, it's all free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there is stuff to buy.
So what's the next adventure for
UAS? The other thing I just want to make people aware of is, yes, summer is just starting, but the fall schedule of classes is just about hot off the press.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned. You're going to see that in the libraries and cafes around town, and it will be an insert in the Capital City Weekly this coming Wednesday, the 21st of May.
Okay, so this Wednesday, look for a copy of Capital City Weekly. It's basically, this is the schedule of available classes that will be offered starting in September, August?
Starting in September.
September.
Yeah, very beginning of September. And you want to sign up as soon as possible.
Man, that is certainly true. That one of the charms of UAS campus is that this is a small campus. Mm-hmm. The classes are small, and that's one of the real advantages to the whole thing is you're working with a small group of people. Everybody gets to know everybody and like that. Mm-hmm. So if you miss one of these opportunities to register, they fill up quick, and particularly if it's one that's required for a degree and has a little pressure on it, like some of the English classes, history classes, and like that. If you don't sign up for those, they can slide right past you. So
You reminded me for testimonials for how important those small class sizes are to students. We have a really impressive slate of outstanding graduates from this year's commencement. And we do have an outstanding graduates page on the UAS website. You can access that from the Juno page, that's uas.alaska.edu/Juno. Click on outstanding graduates, and you can read their stories, see their pictures. And a lot of them talk about how important those small class sizes have been to their education.
Outstanding. Well, thank you very much. And then you can end the day, folks, after all of that fun out at the campus by going to the festival finale for the Juno Jazz and Classics. It's Manhattan Transfer. Let's hear a little of their music. Thank you very much, Katie, for coming down.
Thank you, Pat.
Destroying our sense of fair play, but I
beautiful four-part harmonies of Manhattan Transfer. They're going to be doing a big concert tomorrow night to wind up the weeks of Juno Jazz and Classics. Started May 2nd through May 17th. We've seen some wonderful music in town, heard some wonderful music in town from lots of different classical and jazz groups. My next guest is coming to Juno, but he's a former Alaskan who now lives in Houston and is has had a long and wonderful history working with issues having to do with homelessness and hunger, social problems in the state of Alaska. Mr. George Hieronymus is here in Juno for about a year, and he's going to be the interim executive director of Catholic Community Services. Welcome, George.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be in Juno. I'm
glad you could show up when the weather is typical Juno.
Well, this is where I came. They told me the weather was always like
it
this.
Is.
And,
it is. Absolutely.
And in Houston,
is.
Of course, it's 95 degrees. So I said, oh, well, I like this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that being said, tell us a little bit about the breadth of Catholic Community Services, if you would.
We basically have three programs. One is our senior services, and that feeds seniors at the senior centers and at senior centers in 14 other villages around southeast Alaska. And that's the primary thing that they do, but they do some other stuff too. They've got the caravan program, which takes seniors to doctors, mm-hmm. takes them to the senior center for lunch, things of that sort. And then we've got the child care department, and we do therapeutic foster care, do training with young parents. But, you know, just a lot of kids these days didn't have the parental guidance that we had growing up as children.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I had very good parental guidance, but when I started having kids at 20 years old and my wife was 18, we still needed to learn how to be parents. I mean, it's just
children do not come with a manual, I've noticed.
No, yeah. No. And then we also have our hospice and home care, hospice being care for people at the end of life. And the home care helps a lot of folks coordinate their services, you know, who gets what, where do they go to get things and things of that sort. We also have the, through our senior services, we have the Bridge, which is out on Egan Highway, and that's a day center for elders,
mm-hmm.
so that, I wish we would have had that in Houston. I'm sure they had something, but I didn't know it. But both my mother and my mother-in-law had Alzheimer's at the end of their time, and to have some place to go where they had activities and stuff like that with people mm-hmm. trained to deal with them, and give my wife a chance to go shopping or go home and take a nap or just do something else so there's not care all the way through.
Yeah.
So these are the three primary programs that we have.
This set of programs you provide these vital services, but that process cannot be free. So I guess another question is, where does the money come from?
The majority of the money right now, the great majority of the money right now, comes from grants with the state and with the federal government, and then we also get Medicare and Medicaid for some of our services that we offer to the seniors as well.
Okay.
We get quite a bit of Medicare and Medicaid, actually.
Okay.
And it's a challenge because the federal government just don't want to spend that money.
Yeah.
And they keep reclassifying things, and all of a sudden somebody's getting money, and then for some reason or other, they change the law, they reclassify, and they drop off. And it's just killer for those families and for the people, or the disabled people and the older people who need that kind of stuff.
This has really been, I think, one of the highlights of your career in this area. I noticed from your biography that when you were the director of Beans Cafe, which is kind of fairly similar to our glory hole down here.
Correct.
Up in Anchorage, that your financial reserves were able to grow to over $1 million under your tutelage. So it sounds like you bring to us some skills that are really vitally needed in these days of so much difficulty with getting money for social services.
Pat, I truly hope so. This is what keeps me up at night. We've got wonderful people working for us, and they're doing a wonderful job. Now, it's my job and the board of directors' job to find the funding so that they can do that. And our hope is to develop a lot more individual giving, folks that, you know, just think about Catholic Social Service and Catholic Community Service, and just want to send us $10 a month or $50 a month or $100.
And you certainly would not have any problem receiving that at all.
No. And
say somebody wanted to do that, how would they go about it?
They can call us, and we can send a envelope out to them, or we can give them the address, and they can just drop it in the mail to us, which would probably be the easiest way. Or if they happen to be walking around 6th Street, they can just stop in and say hi.
Okay. So Catholic Community Services, active, very active in the community. You have taken over, it sounds like. You're on the job.
Yeah, and we decided I'm really not the interim executive director. I am the executive director since I'm going to be here a year or longer. If I was going to be here 3 or 4 months, an interim would be good. But so we've just decided that I am the full executive director. And that way my staff don't have to peek in the office every day to see if I'm still there. Did he run off? Did that interim guy run off?
Okay, good enough. So once again, this is the organization that provides so many wonderful services for us, senior services, child care, family resources, hospice and home care, and the caravan program. Thank you so much for your life of service.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for coming down to Juneau, or up to Juneau, I guess, from Houston this time, down to Juneau from Anchorage before. And welcome to our beautiful capital city.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm loving it. And everybody in this place is so friendly. It's just amazing.
You bet. Time now for Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 16th of May, 2014. It was on this date in 1849 the New York City Board of Health established a cholera hospital. The city was in the middle of its second cholera epidemic. The first one came through in 1832, killing thousands of people. Cholera could kill within hours of its first symptoms appearing, caused by a bacterium found in contaminated food and water. People didn't know that in 1849. What they did know was that it seemed to strike the lower classes hardest, and it tore through the tenement districts of New York, immigrants living in crowded conditions. The rich could leave the city. During the epidemic, the Irish, the Italians, the African-American poor could not, and the epidemic killed more than 5,000. It was on this day, 1717, that the French imprisoned the man who said, "People who believe in absurdities will eventually commit atrocities." And that was Voltaire. They put him in the Bastille for insulting the government. It's the birthday of the man who was celebrated for celebrating the uncelebrated, Studs Terkel, born in New York, 1912. It was on this day in 1763 Samuel Johnson and his biographer James Boswell met. They were in a bookshop in London. Boswell was 23 years old. He wanted to be a writer. He didn't know what to write about. And there was Samuel Johnson, who was a famous writer and scholar. They got into a quarrel on this day in 1763, but they made up somehow, and Boswell began following Johnson around, and Johnson warmed up to the idea of the young man coming with him. They talked at great length, went on to become close friends. Boswell wrote down everything that Johnson said, and after Johnson died, 1784, Boswell came out with The Life of Samuel Johnson. 7 years later, it became a big bestseller. After it came out, Boswell didn't know what to do with himself. He became a drunk. People were afraid to confide in him. He died in 1795, working on the third edition. Here's a poem for today by Freya Manfred entitled Grandma's Grave. Mother and I brush long drifts of snow from the gravestones of my great-grandfather and grandmother, great-uncle and aunt, two of mother's brothers, each less than a year old, and her last-born brother, George Shorba, dead at 16, 1925, to 1942, A Mastermind, My Beloved Son. But we can't find the grave of Grandma, who buried all the rest. Mother stands dark-browed and musing under the pines, and I imagine her as a child, wondering why her mother left home so often to tend the sick, the dying, the dead. Borrowing a shovel, she digs until she uncovers 1889 to 1962, Mary Shorba. Mother almost never cries, but she does now. She stares at this stone as if it were the answer to all the hidden things. A poem by Freya Manfred, Grandma's Grave, from Swimming with a 100-Year-Old Snapping Turtle, published by Red Dragonfly Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today and having a wonderful time being indoors on a day when we should all be outdoors. Everyone should be out in the sun, including Gwen Bayless, but luckily she's here to tell us about tomorrow's annual celebration of migratory birds. So, Gwen, you're going to get all the birds together and you guys are going to dance in the streets. Is that the plan?
Well, not exactly. We are going.
I should mention, Gwen is a Forest Service wildlife technician and does this each year. I think we've talked on the air about this a couple of times. So.
Yeah, it is an annual event that we've actually been celebrating here in Juneau for over 16 years. And this year's event is sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, who I work for, as well as the Juneau Audubon Society. And the Juneau Community Garden is the host of the event, and that's going to be from 8 to 11 tomorrow.
So now, Gwen, what migratory birds are moving through Juneau even as we speak? I know we have a panoply that starts months ago and continues well into the summer. So
yeah, migration is continuous all throughout spring.
Uh-huh.
Right now, we still have some shorebirds moving through town, and it's been a good year for shorebirds, especially at places like Eagle Beach. We've had a few rare ones moving through that you may have heard about in the news. But we always have good numbers of things like western sandpipers, rock sandpipers, surfbirds, black turnstones. These are all beautiful shorebirds that come and just for a very short time, often in the spring, as they're moving farther north. We also have some songbirds that either just arrived or on, still on their way, actually, and some that are going farther north. And some examples are the warblers. They're all migratory. We had Wilson's warblers and myrtle warblers and yellow warblers, all the pretty little yellow guys that sing. And some of them are going to stay here and make their nests, and some of them are still on their way. They're just stopping by.
The community garden is an odd player in this. How are they involved?
Well, that's a good place to catch birds, and that's what I'm going to be doing. I set up mist nets out there.
So this is the hummingbird thing that's going on out of the community garden?
This will be for songbirds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we may catch a hummingbird, but they would actually be more like bycatch. I'm going for the slightly larger, the warblers, kinglets, finches, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit like fishing. You don't know what you're going to get. But we hope to show the public some of our beautiful migratory birds. And what it is I set up mist nets and safely capture the birds, and I'm going to put a band on each bird's leg. And that's a way that a technique that we use to study birds, and that's what I'll be sharing with the public. And we've used the garden site before. It's a good place because it has a diverse, different kinds of species, and it's also a relatively convenient place to to go. They have that covered pavilion. It's probably going to be nice weather, so we might not need it, but sometimes it gets a bit rainy.
The forecast is for clouds in the morning and around 70 degrees on a sunny afternoon. So
okay,
I think
well,
really
I don't
really
think we'll
weather.
Really need the pavilion tomorrow, right. But sometimes that comes in handy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if people want to come to this, what time should they start to show up out at the community gardens?
They can come by any time between 8 and 11.
Okay.
But I definitely recommend coming earlier if possible because the birds are very active early in the morning and then they start to get less active later in the morning. So if you want to see the most birds, you'll get there by 8.
By 8. Okay. So a nice early morning activity, and then you can follow that up. We had Katie Bosler on a little while ago, and tomorrow is Campus Community Day. So be a great way to work your way around. We've advised people to come around the back loop, which takes you right past the community gardens.
That would be perfect, yeah.
So there may be someone out there who doesn't know that the community gardens are down Montana Creek Road, and then you take the first major road that goes off to the left, the one that goes down to actually to Montana Creek. And then it's about, half a mile down there before you get to that left turn?
Yeah, probably about a quarter mile, and it's just across from the shooting range.
Yeah.
Not the outdoor shooting range, but the shotgun gun
and,
club.
And, will you have signage out at all? Or?
That's a good idea. Maybe I should put one out there.
Maybe right there on the road, because it's kind of hard to see that road. But the gate will be open, and people are welcome
to
come
the
in.
Gate will be open, and they can pull on into the garden, and there's plenty of parking.
Right, people should know that there's a swinging gate down at the end of that road that goes into the garden. I don't know if you'll have that propped open, but if not, then they need to open that drive-through and close it. That's mostly to keep deer out of the garden.
Yes, and the bears as well.
Yeah.
But it's not locked. The locked gate will definitely be open.
Okay, good. So 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, I ideally come out early to see birds. Tell us what a mist net is. I'm not sure I know what that is.
It looks like a bit like a fishing net, only of a much finer material.
Oh, okay.
They are about 12 meters long and about 10 feet high. And it's a very fine nylon material. And you set it up in the woods in good bird habitat. And the birds are flying through. They are not necessarily expecting something like that there. And they get caught in a little pocket. And if it takes some practice to safely get them out, you do need a license to do this. So don't try it at home.
Okay.
And
but the birds aren't hurt in this process.
No, they're not.
They're
safely released. And actually, last year we caught birds that we had caught there in previous years. And it's really interesting that a bird such as a Lincoln Sparrow that goes all the way to Mexico, that we would recapture him in the exact same spot 2 or 3 years later after he was banded. So that proves that they do survive and that they are habitual in returning to their nesting place.
Well, good enough. Gwen Bayless, Forest Service Wildlife Technician, using a mist net to celebrate migratory birds out at the community garden tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, Back Loop Road down Montana Creek Road, and then take the first major street off to the left and go down about a quarter mile and turn left again onto the driveway. Thank you so much for continuing to do this, and thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Today is Endangered Species Day. With so many pressing human needs in the world for food, water, and places to live, why should we act on behalf of the well-being of other animals? For George Archibald, who's been studying and protecting cranes for 40 years, it's a matter of ethics.
If you consider that other forms of life have a right to live, as we do, and we're doing something to prevent them from living, it's an unethical thing for us to do within that framework. Of course, people have to live too, and we have to share the resources. But as conservationists at the International Crane Foundation, at least, we look for that elusive win-win. How can the basic needs for humans be met, not the extravagant needs, and how can the basic needs of the birds be met? It's difficult to find those answers, but they can be found and they have been found. One of our best examples of win-win is in Africa, where they built dams across the Zambezi River, which really screwed up the floodplains where the wattled cranes lived. But through releases of water in the proper amount at the proper time, you can simulate those flooding events. But it takes cooperation between the engineers, the hydrologists, and the politicians. But it's taken years of hard work. It just doesn't happen.
Find out more about the work of the International Crane Foundation at our website, birdnote.org.
It's 20 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is here. Anton Schwartz is in town. He's a jazz saxophonist. He's going to be giving a big concert over at Centennial Hall tomorrow night?
Tonight, okay.
And so let's start off by just a taste of his music, and then we'll get into a little conversation with him. Saxophone stylings backed up with a great jazz band. So our artist here is Anton Schwartz. Anton, tell us a wee bit about what we're going to hear tonight. You got a quartet, right?
Indeed, yeah.
Okay, and all jazz?
All jazz,
okay.
Yeah, but different sorts.
Yeah.
Going to hear a lot of my own compositions, but also a lot, some jazz standards thrown in, and you know, it's not necessarily a clear-cut distinction where the jazz standards are the accessible ones and my stuff is, you know, going to be more out. It's a nice mix. I think the audience will find it interesting but also accessible.
This is odd work for a guy with a degree in math.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Who worked as a statistician, I believe, for a while?
Well, I did 5 years of a doctorate in artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay, yeah.
At Stanford before I decided that I just
before you decided the saxophone thing, yeah, but you were playing horn all the way through
indeed.
That. That's why you were always late to class and like that.
Well, you know, as a jazz musician, you have a reputation to uphold, so one does the things to preserve that.
Yeah, I hear that. Anyway, but I guess one of the things I wanted to explore is that there, people always say that there is this relationship between music and math. And here I have a mathematician who is a musician. So let me ask, do you feel it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And it's not the sort of thing that I used to talk about or admit to a lot when I was actually a mathematician. But now that I'm on the other side, it's in a lot of what I do. I mean, when you're a musician, you have to think in terms that music is very linguistic in terms of expression, but it doesn't. It's very abstract in the sense that, you know, when you're composing music without words, it's very emotional. It's about something, but it's not about anything tangible, right?
Mm-hmm.
The words, you know, words of the English language have meaning. You say the plate and you know that what we're talking about. You say the wall, you know what we're talking about. Meaning, it's a lot more abstract. And in that sense, it has a lot to do with mathematics, where the notions that you have are not things you've actually seen in the real world. They're at sort of a different level. And yet they do have meaning at the same time.
So there's not an equation running through your head, but it's obvious to me that there's an inspiration here that must come from the fact that you were good in math, and the relationship then is part of what plays here. I don't hear your music as any kind of mathematical puzzle or anything like that. I've heard that Bach may have actually written puzzles into some of the pieces that he composed. That's something that I think musicologists talk about.
Mm-hmm. There's a great old book called Gödel Escher Bach.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name? I'm blanking. That goes into a lot of the puzzle aspects of Bach's music, as mm-hmm. well as Escher, the artist, and Kurt Gödel, who is a philosopher mathematician.
Mm-hmm. I've read some of that. It's tough going if you're not, totally mathematically inclined, but fascinating, interesting idea that the two come together. So you did a very brave thing that I was startled to find when I was looking through your biography. You once did a one-hour saxophone solo concert. And the reason I say brave is because, outside of piano, walking into a concert and seeing one instrument or hearing one instrument for an mm-hmm. hour is like somewhat startling and could turn some people off. I don't know. How'd the audience react? Did they?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, uh-huh. it was, this was this past year for the San Francisco Jazz Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the call for that, I was very curious and intrigued and wasn't sure if I was going to do it, but I guess deep down knew that I had to. The only thing is I wanted to make sure that the room was sufficiently reverberant that I could sort of play off the sound and that it would it could let me, in a sense, almost make chords a little bit that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because doing a one-hour solo concert in a library would just be a nightmare. Would never want to do that. But it was a lot of fun, and I put a lot of thought into it, how to make a single line sound very melodic. And, of course, one of the masters of that was Bach.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
His cello suites for solo cello.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need any other stinking instrument.
We've had the wondrous opportunity here. The new director of the Sitka Music Festival is a cellist and has come up and played Bach's cello concertos for us mm-hmm. in a setting where he plays them all, and you come away from it thinking you've gone through some kind of religious experience almost.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was the idea. It was religious music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess the other question is, you're here for us now. What's next? Where do you go from here?
I am tomorrow afternoon. I'm playing a concert at Stanford University.
Oh.
Actually, so I'm just fingers crossed that that the planes will be on time. The bass player is picking me up at the airport, and we're going straight there.
Uh-huh.
And then after that is another thing that an offer that I got, and I had a little trepidation with it, but in the end couldn't say no. I'm going to be a soloist with the Boston Pops in a week.
Oh, wow. Saxophone solo with the Pops Orchestra.
Yeah,
it's
a Pops Orchestra. Well, it's not an orchestra.
Yeah.
And the
right.
other thing is, there is a classical music tradition for saxophone. It's not as extensive as violin and cello, of course.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to be doing that. It's actually, I was an undergrad at Harvard, and it's a Harvard-themed concert. So Alan Gilbert is the guest conductor. He's the conductor of the New York Philharmonic, and
uh-huh.
we were classmates at school, and so I got the call to play that. So that'll be a new experience.
You must spend a lot of time on the road.
It goes in fits and starts. When I come out with a CD, yes, I spend a lot of time on the road.
I guess we should mention this one is off of not your. You have a new CD out, right?
Yeah, this is the new CD that we're listening to. It's
okay.
called Flash Mob.
Right.
And we'll be playing some things from that tonight, as well as some other compositions of mine from my other CDs.
Okay, and folks at the concert will have a chance to buy that. Concert starts at what time tonight?
7:30
at Centennial Hall. Tickets Indeed. Are still available, sound
mm-hmm.
like.
There's, yeah. I know there's information at the website for Juno Jazz and Classics, which is jazzandclassics.org,
mm-hmm.
pretty sure.
Right. And tickets are almost always available through the bookstores in town, but might act fairly fast. They probably pull them sometime around 5 or 6 o'clock tonight or something
sure
like that,
about that,
so that they can sell at the door and know who's seated where and like that. Okay, good enough. Well, Anton Schwartz, welcome to Juno. Thanks for coming up at a time when we have our typical Juno summer weather.
It was gorgeous today.
Yeah, it's going to be gorgeous tomorrow, too. So you'll have
Thank
a nice flight
so
out
much,
of here.
Thank you so much, Pat. And I hope some people will make it tonight.
Well, I hope so, too. Musical stylings of Anton Schwartz going to be playing a concert tonight at Centennial Hall starting at 7:30. Tickets still available, so take a listen for it. Forgot to mention while he was our guest a little bit earlier on the show, but the Hospice and Home Care of Juno is having a fundraising spaghetti feed. It's May 17th from 5 to 8 p.m. At the Juno Moose Lodge. The menu is spaghetti, salad, and bread. Tickets are $20. Kids 5 and under are free. You can call 463-6100 or 723-4909. 463-6100 or 723-4909 to purchase tickets for the Hospice and Home Care of Juno spaghetti feed tomorrow night. My next guest is here to tell us about some wonderful things that are going on with Woosh Canadier, the Poetry Slam organization in town. There's evidently going to be a big deal here in our new 360 studio at 360 downstairs. So Bill Merck is here, and Bill, you're going to do it in rhyme, or are you just going to...
We have a couple surprises planned for tonight.
No, I mean now.
Oh, for now. No. It'll be free verse.
Okay, yeah, free verse.
And I'll try to keep it as short as I can. I tend to prefer haiku, so we'll see what we can do.
So count words, folks, should be 16, I
That's
think.
That's right. 17, actually.
17 words. Okay. Okay, yeah, and has to have a nature element.
It can.
Yeah, it can, absolutely.
Right.
Okay, so Woosh Canadier, this is an open mic and poetry slam, and it's in the new studio downstairs.
Correct. We're very excited about the opportunity to perform tonight at this venue. I was able to go to the Poetry Out Loud competition that was held here earlier in the year, and it's a fantastic place. We're really, really looking forward to tonight.
That redesign downstairs really gave us the opportunity to host community events in a way that is just wonderful.
We hope to do you proud, honestly.
Yeah. So Woosh Canadier has been in existence for a while now.
2010.
Yeah.
We started October 2010.
Yeah, with four or five people showing up and all of them scared to death.
Yeah, that doesn't happen so much anymore, but it did. We still get some folks up there that tremble a little bit, but, you know, it's a very supportive group, and we welcome anybody of all abilities to come participate.
Now, the way this works is you have a sign-up sheet, so people have to be there by a certain time and get their name on the sheet.
Correct. We actually have two sign-up sheets. We'll have an open mic sign-up sheet, and then we'll have the competitive slam sign-up sheet. Sign-ups start tonight at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Who is the current poetry champion in
June? We had an event, but we didn't have a competition last month. Last month we did a poetry showcase at the Rookery, which was dinner and poetry and music, and it went very well. It sold out. You know, it was a very special event. But in March... Before that, we had an event out at Thunder Mountain High School.
Mm-hmm.
And the young man who won the competition won't be able to join us tonight, but we're hoping that the runner-up will be able to participate as the what we call the sacrificial poet.
Who doesn't get to compete in this.
He doesn't get to compete, but he gets to help the judges calibrate their scoring before we start the competitive portion of the show.
Okay. And when you say judges, who are your judges tonight?
Everyone in the audience is a judge.
Okay.
Specifically, we pick out five people or five groups of people, usually pairs of people, and we give them scorecards, and they don't have to have any judging experience in their background. All they need to do is be a good listener and let the poets know how they feel about the work.
Mm-hmm.
So we have five folks do that. We go through three rounds, depending upon how many competitors we have, and then the poet with the highest accumulated score wins.
Let's back up to open mic. If I understand the rules for open mic, you don't actually have to read your own poetry.
You do not.
So you can bring a poem that particularly has a meaning to you and perform it.
You can do most anything you want to do. We've had stand-up comedy. We've had musicians. We haven't had a mime yet, and I don't know how well that would play. And we haven't had jugglers
either. You'd have to mime and rhyme.
I challenge anyone out there. But yes, you can read someone else's work. You can read your own work. You can have musical accompaniment. You can do whatever you like to do.
Oh. So this is a real opportunity to kind of, the open mic night is kind of an opportunity to find an inner you that you may not know existed. I think that may be true of some of the Woosh Canadier people that have stayed with it, is they may have come to one of these things and then maybe come back and thought, I could do that.
We think so. It's been a pleasure to be with the group. I'm not one of the founding members, but I've been going to these consistently since 2010. So I've seen a number of poets really grow through this event. A couple of younger poets who got up and weren't so sure in the beginning, and their style has just taken off. They've really blossomed and grown. It's really pleasing to see that.
Well, Bill, we have a minute, so let's remind everybody this is tonight at starting at 6:30 is the sign-up, right?
The open mic starts at 6:30.
Open mic starts at 6:30, and then the actual competition will begin at the end of the period of time for the open mic.
Yeah, we'll take a little break between the open mic and the competitive portion, yeah.
Okay, and if anybody doesn't know where it is, if you're coming downtown, you just look for KTOO, and that's where the studio is and like that. Thank you so much, Bill, for bringing the word to us.
Thank you so much
for doing this so much.
Very excited. Thank you.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 on Evening at Egan, esteemed Gwich'in teacher, community healer, and tradition bearer Randall Tetlici talks about human-caribou relations from a First Nations perspective. That's followed at 9:30 by First Face, The Buck Stops Here, the story of Gilbert Stuart's iconic portrait of George Washington. Great Decisions in Foreign Policy is at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
It's 1 minute before 4 o'clock. You're in tune still with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, been your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Had a great time doing it. We're going to have a little show on Monday. Same kind of thing. Joan Pardis will be hosting. She has an update on CBJ activities. Kim Kiefer will drop in to do that. We'll be learning about winning the million-to-one game, customer service workshop training offered by the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, Hearthside Books authors at the Sea Cruise, and Marion Call will come in with a preview of her Thursday night concert at Cuppa with Laura Zahosky, and we'll have the usual features of Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more on Monday at 3, so tune in for Juneau Afternoon. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we broadcast on translators in the Valley and Auk Bay, K276 AF 103.1, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO 101.7, Gustavus, KO201 AM 88.1, and K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet, Icy Strait, it's KTOO and K210 AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN will be heard on digital channel 872 and KXLL on 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Been a great joy and pleasure to bring this to you on this nice, warm, sunny Juneau day. Stay tuned for All Things Considered in 30 seconds.